I'm really excited about today. All three of these men are an absolute inspiration to me, and they all play a big part in my recovery. One gentleman in particular is really has a special place in my heart, and I met him early in sobriety, and meeting him and listening to him speak for a weekend absolutely transformed my life. And all three of these men are on the same page, and they're living the same deal. And I'm so honored to have all three of them in the room today to share their experience with us on this deal of ours. And maybe I should silence my cell phone. All right. Okay. Excellent. I probably should have wrote down the format so I know who's coming up next. I'm gonna forward this over to you real quick and you can write it down. Sorry. Where is Pat? There it is. I'll give everybody a real quick breakdown. What's gonna happen? Buy myself a little time. All right, steps one and two, we're gonna have Peter speaking on steps one and two. And Mike is going to come up and speak on steps 3 and 4. Pat is going to speak on steps 5, 6, and 7. Then we're going to break for lunch. We're going to have about a 10-minute break in between each speaker. Then Mike will speak on 8 and 9 after lunch. Pat will speak on 10. Then Peter will speak on 11. And then all three will speak on step 12 to wrap the day up. So I don't know about you, but I'm really excited about this. How do I do this? There we go. So, let's get this thing going. And without any further ado, we're going to bring up Peter M. to kick us off with steps 1 and 2.
Forget your phone, guy. I've done a million of these things. I've never seen a guy work the phone from a podium. Order Chinese while you're at it. Oh, boy. My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober in a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And let's thank Danny and the rest of the group for putting this up this morning. Now, I don't know how many people really know Danny and how he dresses, but he I thought he got drunk last night based on how he's dressed this morning. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. And the journey has been interesting for me. There's been times over the last 28 years where I've been in a place of doubting even Alcoholics Anonymous and God, because I thought they weren't listening. There's been a place where it's been delightful and inspiring, and I felt I was firing on all cylinders. And what I've learned from that is to pay no attention to any of it, because it's usually coming from the mind, which is trying to create a picture. And I always think God is like the Santa Claus, always going to be giving. And when struggles come, I believe God's not paying attention. So what I try to do on most days is just chop wood and carry water, get in the trenches, work with a drunk, be accountable to a sponsor, and do the work that's in front of me that God allows me to do. And that's how I get here today. My current life consists of what it has been for quite some time. I'm one of the folks who go through the work annually with the sponsor. I have what I would call a strict spiritual disciplined life and discipline to the spiritual principles in the big book, specifically with steps 10 and 11 and passing that all on in 12. I speak to my sponsor on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock, and rarely do we miss those calls. And those calls consist of, well, it might be inventory, which is usually the case, and it might be some other things as well. A prayer and meditation life of 3 times a day. And I have a nightly review life. I've been disciplined that way. I've missed very few nights over, believe it or not, almost 28 years. I missed just a few nights of writing the nightly review and then discussion with someone else. And some of us write it and some of us don't. My lineage was brought up in writing that stuff. And it gets me here today. It has allowed me to have a relationship with a God of my understanding. June 23rd, 1988, my separation from alcohol, no plans of landing in Alcoholics Anonymous, nor did I plan on landing in my 7 treatment center. On that particular day, I was, if you will, struck sober. I was rescued from the scrap heap. it was a day where I came to in the back of an abandoned building, and for the first time that I can recall, I didn't want to die that day. And I had tried killing myself twice, one real good effort at doing this, because as Bill says, the courage to do battle was not there. I hit that point, and trapdoors have trapdoors. And here I am in this hallway, and I remember getting up off the floor and then collapsing. And here came the tears, and here came that incomprehensible demoralization, and a feeling of hopelessness was quickly followed by the moment of clarity. Before we get to stand in the sunlight of the Spirit, we need to know what the dark feels like. You can't see the light unless you've been in the dark, and that's been my experience. And it started June 23rd, started with a very, very dark day. There was no hope in sight until I fell to the floor, and the very same power who had mocked and cursed that for so long and thought men and women who followed God would weak and cowardly. I would see men going into church. I would see men talking about God, and I thought they were weak and cowardly. But everything shifted. There was a shift in consciousness that particular day that I didn't plan on. It was given to me out of God's great mercy, because he didn't want to lose another one of his kids. And I was given, in this darkness, a little a flicker of light. There's something I was just talking about the other night from Scripture. It says, unless a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. Cannot see the kingdom of God. Which means prior to that rebirth, or Big Book calls it getting reborn in third step, in doctor's opinion, it's about recreating. It's a do-over. Can't go back into mama's womb, but we're going to start over. And that spiritual awakening can begin, I'm one of them, in the worst moment of our life. We will get it as a result of going through the Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous, as a result of having the steps taught to us and having an experience with the 12 steps. An experience with the 12 steps, not just reading the book and getting some information and getting drunk 10 minutes later. An experience with the book. The book manufactures 12 spiritual transformation. But if we think about it, I bet you most of us have this, in that moment where the thing shifts, the pilot light goes on, where we go from darkness to see a flicker of light, is when the beginning of the spiritual transformation begins, because we're made teachable. We're made open. We're made desperate. We're made willing. That's what happened to me. And I got the G.O.D., the gift of desperation, on June 23rd, 1988. Now, I had tried stopping many times. I tried quitting many times and landed in treatment again and landed in worse places. I would quit and then get drunk. I would stop and then get drunk, because the obsession to drink and the physical craving, I was at a point where if I didn't drink, I was starting to get very sick. The shakes, the anxiety, the sweats, all of that. And so here I was, another day of torment and frustration, and the pilot light gets turned on, and I get a little bit of a moment of clarity that was given to me. The surrender is given to us. The willingness to go to anyone is given to us when we run out of road. And in that particular moment, I wanted and needed this power called God, even though I didn't know what it was. I was so afraid of it. I didn't know what was going to happen. There's something in another book that says, it goes something like, we all have this fire in our soul to know our Creator, to get right, to feel an okayness in Him, in here. Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to take a walk I never did before, to work with 12 steps I had no experience with before, and to experience a power called God that I didn't even know before. In fact, my only opinions on God were bad ones. And the only thing that allowed me to follow directions as they do now is this fire that still burns in my soul to be right with God. But it had to begin somewhere, and it began with the worst moment of my life, and that was June of 88. And I remember begging to God for help. And through a series of events, I land in my 7 treatment center. And I'm desperate, which is a great thing. I have found coming into AA and while we're in AA, and we can bottom out because the wheels will come off the bus. A lot of us will experience untreated alcoholism while we're sober. Well, I'll get to the bedevilments in a moment to see what that feels like and what that looks like. But on the way in here, I had to have that GOD. I had to run out of road because until I ran out of road, I was still going to try to control and manage this thing my way. Direct everyone to do what I want and see how I'm supposed to live. I became the master of my own domain, the king of my own little kingdom. And if I didn't get what I wanted, I hated God more and I despised people more. And it's really interesting. The alcohol, the untreated alcoholism took me to depths of despair, yet I reached back for a drink to cope with the depths in despair, and the drink would take me even lower. Everything changed in June of 88. My alcoholism, I can tell you where I am right now. If anyone's new in here, that you won't get this yet, but hopefully you will one day. My alcoholism, where I stand with you this morning, is a gift. My alcoholism is a gift. With all the torment it brought me and all the terrible sufferings I experienced at my own hand, alcoholism is a gift. Because what it has allowed me to do is seek God, is to continue to get into this book, to go to outside sources for more information so I can have a greater transformation, to be teachable. My alcoholism has allowed me to be a seeker. And without alcoholism, I don't know where I would be if I was just a civilian doing a 9-to-5 gig and worried about everything. High blood pressure, heart attacks, overweight, and dropping dead. I would have been dead already, just in stress alone. I will tell you, without God, without spiritual fitness, I don't do well with abstinence. I have a really bad reaction to abstinence alone. I don't get just don't drink and go to meetings and stay sober. If you're a moderate drinker or a hard drinker, you pull that off. But a guy like me, the one on page 21, just being abstinent without a relationship with God, I don't know how you do this. In fact, I'll get on a soapbox. I don't even know why we even talk about those things at AA, don't drink and go to meetings, because we can kill people, a real alcoholic, with a statement like that. Because if that guy or that woman had the power not to drink, why would I have to come to a meeting? I'd be on the beach right now. I'm stuck here with you. No, I'm only kidding. Six treatment centers prior to going into number 7. I still had no clue what I suffered from. I knew once I started, I'd keep drinking, but that was about it. I'm in the treatment center business almost as long as I'm sober. And I can't tell you how many kids come in, kids 25 and under, come in with 10 and 15 and 20 and 25 treatment centers. And I say, what do you suffer from? Well, I have anxiety. So does half the planet. Well, I have depression. So does a lot of other people. Well, I can't do life. I suffer from fear. What is wrong with you? And the only thing they get is, when I start drinking or taking other substances, I can't stop it. That's all they got, and I identify with that. They don't know what the problem is. How can we even get to the solution if we haven't identified the problem? So for me, on the way into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1988, on the way into my 7 treatment center, I was clear that once I pick up a drink, I'm having the second drink. That's coming. And then there's a third drink, and then I'm drunk, and I'm on a drunk again. And what I like to do is when I drink, I like to eat a lot of pills. And then all bets are off. And while I'm going to pick up a drink, I don't want to pick up a drink. I don't know if you can identify with this, but laying in a detox, crying over what I just did again, and leaving the detox or leaving treatment and getting another drink because I had to. I was condemned to drinking. On the way to go to the liquor store, I'm saying, I really shouldn't be doing this. This is so bad. I don't want to do this. Give me a pint and just wash it all away. But the pint wasn't enough, and I'd be on a drunk again. And the trapdoors have trapdoors. So on the way into Alcoholics Anonymous, I got a fairly good idea of what I suffer from in one part of the illness, and that was the body part. You can see that. I can feel it. I can't stop drinking. But what keeps me taken back to that which is killing me? What takes me back to that which is killing me over and over and over again? And when we look at step one, there's two parts to it. But I didn't know anything about this stuff. Sitting in my 7 treatment center after being homeless in the same clothes for too long, no food, dehydrated, 130 pounds. I'm 195 now. I look like I just got out of a POW camp. I'm urinating blood. I got Hep C. I'm dying of alcoholism. I still have marks on my body from 2 runs ago. I still had marks and abscesses. I don't even know how they could touch me when they did a physical when I walked into treatment. I was a wreck. After all of that, I get into my 7th treatment center, and 10 days goes by, about. And I'm thirsty all over again. And my mind is telling me, if I can just get one, a little taste, just one drink in me, everything will settle down, and I can go to group and participate in the little groups they do in treatment, right? And talk about my feelings and my issues and all this stuff, which is nice to talk about. It has its place. But it does nothing to solve my problem. Same thing, we go to a meeting and we share a problem. That's great, you shared a problem, that's wonderful. But you are still leaving with the problem without a solution. And I'm probably going to leave with a problem because I'm going to be talking about you all night. What's wrong with this person? How come no one's offering a solution? So a problem shared is still a problem. What is the solution to this stuff when we start with alcoholism? So after 10 days of laying in this treatment center, I want to get another drink in me. I got to get another drink in me. And I almost AMA'd after 10 days. And truly, by God's grace, I went off to Minnesota, and I did 6 more weeks of treatment. I lived in Minnesota for a year. Now, during that time, I met some pretty neat people at a meeting called the Three Legacies Meeting, who got to the podium with the big book, and they were talking about not only living in the sunlight of spirit, but how they got there. And what I found out was I suffer from a threefold illness, and with 28 years sober, I still got it. This thing called alcoholism that owns me has gone dormant. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I don't say recovered to separate myself from anyone in this room or to be unique or special. But it's the first promise in the big book that I get to a place called recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. This phenomenon called craving is one part of this. But the body, the craving in the body's intensified, never satisfied when I pick up a drink. My experience abundantly confirms that. If, God forbid, I was to pick up a drink today, you'll pull me out of a dumpster tomorrow morning with the same clothes on because I keep going. I don't have a gradual decline. I blow up because my body screams for more. The craving's always intensified, never satisfied. Now I know that. I know that. My experience, you have to look back at my experience. This is what happened to me for year after year after year, where it poisoned my family, separated me from my family. I was unemployed. I was homeless. Now, I know all this stuff. Why would I go back to picking up a drink? Because I have this predator that we have as alcoholics, the other part of this illness where the main problem lies, and that is the thinking mind. That is the mind. And anytime I go into self-reliance, anytime I try to figure stuff out, I'm back into managing my life. My big book says I'm an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life, that's drunk or sober. So that's the thing that takes me back to a drink. And the only way I can get a new mind, be born again, wake in the spirit and give me a new mind, new eyes to see, new ears to hear, new words to speak, and obviously new actions, is to an awakening of the spirit. And my experience has shown that going to meetings, you know, the fellowship is one side of the three-sided triangle, but just going to meetings is not going to treat my alcoholism because I come into the meeting with that same mind, and maybe it goes dormant for an hour while I'm here because I feel good around the fellowship. But I get into the parking lot, my mind gets into the parking lot with me and follows me home. And it's always talking about a drink. And if it isn't talking about a drink, what the mind will do is take me underground and the illness will resurface in other areas while we're sober. And they're called food sprees and sex sprees and money sprees and fear sprees and just sprees, thinking sprees. We're always thinking. Always got to figure stuff out. Self-reliance is a form of dishonesty. Because in the third step, I turn everything over to God and I quickly go back to, well, I'll figure this out. So I got this mind. And going to meetings is not going to treat this mind. The only power that can heal it, fix it, is God. So we will spend lots of times in meetings talking about problems, talking around the steps, talking even around the traditions, talking about the fellowship, but we don't really clearly give directions on how to have an experience with God and experientially share what it's like being with a God. Because when the new one walks in the door, what information am I giving them? What about the old timers here for a while who's struggling? and has gone to 10,000 meetings and still has that thing, that hole in the soul. So I got this mind and this body, and then I got this spiritual malady. Now, a lot of folks out there have a spiritual malady. We watch CNN News or one of these news programs and see the state of the world right now. The planet is nuts. The planet is suffering from spiritual malady. So I'm not unique in that area, but I got it too. So I have this spiritual malady, a mental obsession phenomenon called craving. Pour me a drink. I don't do life well. I don't live life on life's terms still. I never offer that to anyone because I can't. Life hurts. It's like needles coming at me. I'm fear-based, insecure, and the ego the size of this room. I need attention. I need approval. I need love. I need money. I need stuff. I need prestige. I need property. I need things to make me feel good. And what I continually do is wrap that stuff around me. Hopefully, it'll cover up this hole in the soul or maybe even fill it. So you think I'm okay, and better than that, so I feel I'm okay. That's why I'm sober. Because the soul has not gotten any food yet. So I suffer from this threefold illness. Now, first half of my first step tells me I'm going to get drunk. In fact, step one tells me, Peter Marinelli, you're getting drunk. This illness is not impressed with 28 years sober. It doesn't care. It didn't even make a dent. It's just gone dormant. Step one tells me I'm going to drink. Not I can't, he can, I think I'll let him. I don't know where that came from. I don't even know what that means. I can't. No, I am. I am going to drink. There's a bar stool and a drink waiting for me. There's a liquor store with my name on the bottle and Mr. Boston just waiting for me to show up, and it'll wait forever. Step one will tell me I'm drinking. What am I going to do about this problem? I have no power, choice, control in the mind before I even pick up a drink. Imagine that. I'm sitting in a meeting sober. Just got my 90-day chip or my 5-year chip or my 30-year chip, and I still can't stop the drink from coming at me, and I go pick it up. No power, choice, control in the mind. And if we think about how many other areas of our life where the illness has gone underground and resurfaced on the sex spree, the food spree, the money spree, where we want to stop and we just can't. I don't want to go binge and purge. I had that my first 6 months. Binging and purging. I don't want to do this anymore. And there I am, gorging on food and then vomiting. This is bad. I shouldn't do this. I'll do it again. The sex spree. You know how many young guys I sponsor come to? I got to talk to you what? I'm spending way too much time on my computer in the dark. It's killing me. I don't want to do it anymore. I can't do it. My wife's going to divorce me, and there they are again. Where's that all come from? Lack of power, choice, control. For me, the most powerful sentence in my big book is lack of power is my dilemma. That sums me up. So I need power not to have a dilemma. So the first half tells me I'm drinking. I have no power, choice, control in the mind before I pick up a drink. And then what happens to me? I pick up a drink because I'm condemned to drink. I can't stop drinking. Even with sober time, even with getting out of treatment, even with doing meetings, there'll come a time and place where my mind says drink, and I pick up a drink, and I don't have power, choice, control in the body. I got the craving going on. It intensifies this allergic reaction, this allergy. And with me, when I start drinking, I look to ante it up a little, jack it up a little bit. So now I'm looking for some pills just to push me down even more, make me comfortably numb. The more numb I feel, the better. I actually feel like I'm in control when I'm drinking and I'm eating that stuff. I feel like I'm really together. I got it together. I feel okay in here. I'm totally out of control, but the feeling is I'm good now. I was in my fifth treatment center. Great story to illustrate how I operate. I was in my fifth treatment center for 9 weeks. And they kept me for 9 weeks. I had done the 28-day model back in the day with Blue Cross, Blue Shield, whatever insurance company give you 28 days, you could go home. And they knew I was in serious trouble. And so what the clinicians did was they wrote up some bogus psych issues so the insurance company would keep me longer. They wrote up I was a lunatic and he's got to stay longer. So they were able to hold me in this treatment center for 9 weeks. And back in the day, 9 weeks was a pretty long time sitting in a treatment center. They would bring me over to the psych ward, I forget what they called it, and I'd sleep there, and they'd bring me over to meetings, and everyone on that side was chasing butterflies and weird stuff. I met Lincoln there. It was interesting. And they'd bring me over to the regular unit for the meetings. So after 9 weeks, they discharged me. They couldn't hold me anymore. And they told me what to do, how to do it. You got to go to these meetings and so on and so forth. Now, on the way into my fifth treatment center, when the book says we conceded to our innermost self that we were alcoholics, that's the first step in recovery. That concession, that surrender, if you will, is a spiritual thing that happens. But I still had a little reservation, a lurking notion. I still had a whole bunch of self-reliance. I'm going to man up and do this. So I get discharged after 9 weeks in my fifth treatment center. Now, after 9 weeks of being separated from alcohol, I had no post-acute withdrawal syndrome. My body did not need a drink. My body did not need any mood or mind-altering substance, period. My body was fine. I even put on weight. I could hold food. Food and water just wasn't running through me like when I got in there. So I looked physically okay. I felt physically okay. And a short time before they discharged me, I thought I was a Moses because I wasn't even thinking about a drink. I said, I'm good. I finally got it. I got the cure. I'm not thinking about it. Physically, I feel well. Everything's good. Bill says the goose hung high. They discharged me on a Saturday morning. And soon as I left the hospital, Amityville, Long Island, hit Sunrise Highway, it was as if the illness was waiting for my discharge date because I got slammed. Soon as I hit the fresh air, it was on me like it never left. I was in a state of obsession immediately, and moreover was my body felt like it needed a drink now. Prior to that, my body was fine. Suddenly, I got anxiety. I got the cold sweats. My hands are doing. There was nothing wrong with me. My stomach's upside down. My hands are shaking. I can't think. I can't eat. I'm not hungry. I got a chatter of 1,000 voices going on. I got to get out of here. I couldn't get out of my own way. It's called untreated alcoholism, and we can suffer from that while we're in here with double-digit sobriety. This is this wonderful predator called the thinking mind that we like to listen to all day long. How many of us right now are listening to it while I'm speaking? Probably everyone. We go to a meeting, one half is on the meeting, the other half is, what am I having for dinner tonight? I don't like the speaker, I don't like these people, the game's on, when's football season, what did I come here for? I'm going to kill Danny for getting me involved with this, what did I do this for? There's the future Mrs. X, I mean, whatever is going on. So, I'm around my house for 2 days, and I'm a bundle of nerves. And I want to drink. My mind's saying a drink would fix this. One little drinky pool will be okay. The nerves would settle. I'll be just a drink. Just a drink. I swear to you, one. We're only going to have one. This is the voice that talks to us, right? Monday morning came, and I flew to downtown Brooklyn as fast as I can get there. I went to the liquor store I always went to, and I waited for the liquor store guy to get there, the owner. I'm standing outside, and I'm pacing. Remember the pacing and waiting and pacing and waiting? I look like a dolphin looking to get a fix. There was nothing wrong with my body. But my mind said, yeah, there is. You need a drink. And as soon as the liquor store guy opened up his store, I put my money underneath the glass partition. I got a pint of Mr. Boston. I went outside. I cracked the seal, and I drank the Mr. Boston blackberry brandy as fast as I can drink it, like a man who was on a desert for a month and got a glass of water. It couldn't go down fast enough, and I was not drinking for taste. I was drinking for relief. I was drinking for freedom, because that's what I do when I'm alcoholic. That's what I do with my alcoholism. I pour alcohol on it. I had to settle down. I had to get back together and feel I'm in control. I'm good now. And it's a big, okay, now I can eat. Now I can talk. Now I can go about my day. The problem was, after that pint was gone, I had to hustle up money to get another pint because the craving was on. Prior to that liquor store, my body was fine. My mind says, no, it isn't. How many of us listen to the mind all day long? It tucks us in and wakes us up in the morning. How many folks drove here alone in the car this morning? Anybody driving their car alone this morning? One, just one, two. Okay, 3-4. We're getting on this now. Okay. So you're alone in the car driving here, right? Okay. If we think about the drive over here alone in the car, were you really alone in the car, or did you have a conversation going on with about 45 other people all at once, right? Talking to people, arguing with people from the third grade. How are you going to speak at the international stadium meeting? You're going to be the only speaker at the whole international because you deserve this. How are you going to hit Powerball tonight? All these stuff. And you're arguing with people. Then you look in the mirror and say, I'm getting old. I'm too young. I'm too tall. I'm too short. I'm too fat. I'm too thin. It goes on and on and on. And we walk in too many and go, how are you doing? We go, I'm exhausted. I don't know what's going on. I'm so tired. They're waiting for you in the car when you leave. And this is what we do all day long. All day long. One of those voices says, you know, a drink now would be good. It's a beautiful summer day. The heck with this workshop. We'll go sit by the pool, one beer like a gentleman, like a lady, a glass of wine. No one's going to get hurt. A little marijuana maintenance. I've gone through the steps now. I know what I need to do. And it slips right in there. And we get hijacked. And the only way we're able to not experience that is based on our spiritual condition. This whole thing for me hinges on my relationship with God and nothing less than that great fact. I go to a lot of meetings. I love being a part of this fellowship. And I sponsor a lot of men. I love sponsoring people. And I go through the steps with my sponsor annually. And I love doing stuff like that, even though it makes me uncomfortable. But all of that is to drive the drunk back to God and rekindle, recreate that relationship with God. Get a newer relationship, a fresher relationship, more transparency with God. Because if I'm lacking that, I'm getting drunk. And my mind will tell me, no, you're fine. I find fault in you for something that I excuse in myself now. I'm not going to meetings, that's okay. I haven't written inventory in 6 months. That's okay. I haven't prayed in a while. I don't even know what meditation looks like. It's okay because I'm special. And I will tell you quickly how special I am. Because my mind will endorse unspiritual behavior and make it very spiritual. And alcohol owns me. Alcoholism owns me. When I look at the second half of the first step, which says our lives had become unmanageable, I have been shown that the essence of that word unmanageability is what's going to happen to me is I will get hijacked. I don't know what the day looks like when a drink says we're going to get drunk and I go. And I throw away relationships, jobs, dignity, all of it for the price of a drink. And I can't see that day coming. It just shows up and I go and I can't even stop it. That's unmanageability. Knowing the time and place is going to come where I'm getting drunk and I have no power to stop that. If God forbid we saw a predator on our front lawn, we dial 911 to stop it. If we see an accident up ahead, we slow down. Unless you're on 95, they go right into the traffic. You see a traffic accident up ahead, you slow down and go around it to avoid it. With alcoholism, when the drink is there, I go in head first and nothing can stop me. I get hijacked every time. I can't even see it coming. That's real unmanageability. But what can happen to us, I'm one of them, is we get stuck on the second half of the first step. And it looks like this. I was homeless. I lived in a hallway. I come into AA a while, get sober, get some spiritual muscles. Now I'm sober. I have clean clothes on. I'm sober. I'm bathing. I'm sober. I'm eating. I'm sober. I have a job and I have a little relationship. I have some money in my pocket. I'm starting to look good. I'm getting haircuts regularly. I'm bathing. I'm eating. I got a little complexion. I look pretty healthy. We look pretty healthy. Hey, you look good, kid. Keep it up. We do that all the time. And so what the mind says, okay, my life is now manageable because it's not in the street anymore. So this is what they're talking about. And what I need to do is keep the external conditions looking good, believing that's the remedy for the internal condition called alcoholism, and it is not. It's actually a liability. So I got to keep the money, keep the relationship, keep all the stuff looking good. Can't go to a meeting looking a little disheveled. They might think less of me. So I got to keep the bar way up here, and it doesn't even work. So I can get stuck on the second half of the first step, and that little dash, we don't have the shades here, the little dash between the first half and the second half of the step goes up and it becomes a wall. And I live in the second half of the first step, keep the life manageable. Convince you it's manageable. Sound good at a meeting. I will never share with you my drama. I will never share with you my struggles because I don't look good, which means my life is unmanageable and I can't have that. The ego will insist that I present well all the time and not show any vulnerability. Block off transparency. And now I'm living on page 52 because what happens is I start to have troubles with God because it's not God reliance, it's me reliance. Which means I'm struggling in my relationship with others. Which means I'm struggling, period. And I've stepped into fear. That's the living in the second half of the first step. My life's unmanageable, it looks manageable, and that's my goal. And it's all taking me back to a drink. I was sharing Thursday night. I read this book, like many of us, a million times. And every once in a while, I think Bill comes back from his grave and puts a new line in there to kind of wake me up. On page 27, he says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are cast aside for a new set of conception ideas. What sort of ideas, emotions, and attitudes own me right now, are driving me right now, giving me a false sense of self, a sense of identity as to who I am, not who I be? Well, I'm the guy who makes the coffee. I'm the big book guy. I'm the spiritual guy of the group. I'm the leader of my family. I'm the CEO of my company. I'm the guy with the money. I'm the guy with the no money. And it goes on and on and on. Real men don't cry. Woman's place is here. And we live with these belief systems. We live with belief systems about Alcoholics Anonymous, how we think it should operate, all based on me. And I'm quickly playing God and the director. That stuff's got to go. I need a huge, spectacular upheaval to rearrange all of that and maybe for once see some truth. And when I have ideas, attitudes, and emotions which are guiding me, I'm living all over page 52, which is untreated alcoholism. Well, I'm sober 20 and 30 years. Well, I'm sober 90 days. It says we were having trouble with personal relationships. Am I? This is current agnosticism. This is current unmanageability, which means I have current fear and current self-reliance. All step one, how do I get this book to meet me while I'm sober 20 years? I know the book. We know the book. I can quote pages and everything. When I say I mean us. So how do I get this book if I sit down with a sponsor and want to have a new experience? How do I get this book to meet me where I currently am? We go to bedevilments and see where I'm at. Trouble with personal relationships, am I? And I don't mean that maybe you argue with the spouse one night or the kids, you argue with the kids or you have a spat with a coworker or something like that. And then we fix up and we move on, we turn the page. We're talking about trouble. I'm constantly battling with people who aren't even around. I'm sitting on my couch. The bills are paid. I have a good job, new car. The wife, the kids are good. The health is good. Everybody's good. Everything's good. Everything is good. And my mind goes, yeah, but how many more years do you have? You know, you're a little overweight. You know, you're a little, and it starts. Remember what they did to you? Remember that time? I know they're going to do this. And suddenly I'm battling with people. And that's one way I looked at it for years. And just recently, it kind of spun around on me. I'm looking at it like this. How often do we feel so self-centered and self-conscious that we're consumed with ourselves? I'm laughing too much. I'm not laughing enough. I'm talking too much. I'm not talking enough. I'm not that bright as this person, so some would become gun-shy. Do you ever around someone who's got lots of credentials and you know they've graduated some fancy school? I'm in the treatment center business. I meet people with 400 letters in front of their name. They speak in English, but I don't even know what they're talking about. All these psych issues. And my Brooklyn mind says, get out of the room. You don't even belong in there with them. And I get a little gun-shy and even a little timid about offering something that was valuable to them. I'm having trouble in personal relationships. When I was new in AA, get around the elders, the giants in AA, and I thought I had to sound good so they liked me. I'm having trouble in personal relationships. I was never allowed to be me. Cracks in the armor, I leak oil, this is me, take it or leave it. can never do that. That's trouble in personal relationships. How free do I want to be? How free do we want to be? And we're experiencing freedom this morning. We want to get freer, experience more of God. Because I've learned this. The clock is ticking from the day I was born, July 14th, 1959. Popped out of mama. In that moment, I was already running out of time. Now I'm 57. The clock is ticking. Everyone, we live in a world of impermanence, we're running out of time. If you're 25, you say, this guy's loony. We're running out of time. From the day I was born, as soon as I popped out of mama, the clock's now, like 60 minutes, tick, 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 tick. That's me. That's my life. How much longer am I going to wait to get free? To get redeemed of the old life to this new life? Because the time and place is going to come where if we're on you to pick up a drink, time and place is going to come, God's going to say, now come home. I can't tell them I need to write inventory before you call me. I need to make another meeting. I can't leave yet. My grand sponsor, he was sick for a while. And when the day comes, I hope I can be that graceful. Everything was in order. He lived this life. And he woke up out of his sleep. He looked at his family. He says, it's time. And went back to sleep. And went home. That's a spiritual giant. He wasn't wrestling with it. He wasn't resisting it. He embraced it. The clock for me is ticking. What am I doing? Trouble of personal relationships. Can't control my emotional nature. I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I spill a cup of coffee and I go, it's going to be one of those days. I didn't even wake up yet, really. How many of us, when we wake up in the morning, as soon as your eyes open, the voice is already talking to you? It doesn't hang around till you get a couple of coffees and a carton of cigarettes and you 12 Red Bulls. So, okay, let's start now. Soon as you open your eyes, you got a dialogue going on. And very often it's not good. That stuff doesn't go away. And we base our day, how often do we, our day is based on how you do. If you're happy, I'm happy. If you're miserable, I'm miserable. And I start dialogue over you all day long. Our day is predicated on other people's emotions. I'm having trouble in personal relationships, and I definitely can't control my emotional nature. In fact, I will tell you, even when I'm spiritually fit, I still have no control over that. It all hinges on God. It tells me this. We're prey to misery and depression. Do I think I have any control over that? And why sometimes we're walking around, we feel like the bottom just fell out, and there's no reason to feel that way, based on what happened out there. Prey to misery and depression. It says we are full of fear, had a feeling of uselessness. If I'm having trouble in personal relationships, I'm not very useful to other people, because even when I'm sponsoring that new guy, I'm consumed with me and what he's thinking of me. So I'm trying to look good to a guy with one day back, claiming I'm fit with God. With me? Full of fear. Unhappy. Can't seem to be of real help to other people. It says, is not our age characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas, by complete readiness which we throw away the theory or gadget which does not work for something new which does? I used this recently. We're always getting new equipment, new iPhones, new vapes, new TVs, new cars, because we want the new model, the one with more bells and whistles. Get rid of the iPhone because there's a new one out. We'll mortgage our future on an iPhone because we got it, right? I remember when the cell phones first came out, the smaller, the better. Now they look like the size of the big book. But you're always getting these new things. We discard old gadgets for new. But when it comes to our life and discarding belief systems which don't work, we pump the brakes. And if I'm experiencing anything on page 52, I need to take a look at, is it possible it's untreated alcoholism? And I fell into self-reliance. And part of my unmanageability is when I'm in self-reliance, I have fear. When I have fear, it's because of current agnosticism. And when I have current agnosticism, it's because of self-reliance. And it's a vicious cycle. And little by slowly, I'm going back to a drink. But my mind will never tell me that. There's a subtle shift that can happen for some of us. when we're here a while. And we're doing all the work we're supposed to do that we get to do. We're working with sponsees. We have a sponsor. We're packing in. We're in the center of this whole thing. But sometimes, if we're not careful, we still can be blind to the illness trying to get in. And it may not come in with the drink. It'll come in with money. It'll come in with the busted up relationship. It'll come in with the new relationship. It'll come in with something. And I've been sharing this a lot because I'm free enough and gotten clear enough to talk about this. I was working. Like I said, I'm in the treatment center business. I was working, and there was the honeymoon phase where I was working, and then there was the ugly phase. And I was under the gun constantly. Stress here, this high, and trying to keep my job, forgetting that God's my employee, and if he wants me working somewhere, he will, and if he don't, he will move me, and wherever he moves me, it's going to be okay. I lost sight of that. And what I quickly, you know, gain the world and lose our soul, and what I woke up to was how quickly the illness got right in there, and I was selling my soul, giving my soul up for an employer and a place of work, and I was wondering, how come something's missing? I'm not sure what's going on. I got a lot of pain in here, and it must be because I'm just tired. Maybe it's because I don't have enough money. But what I was doing was I was shifting to God-reliance, to job reliance, to self-reliance, and I was about to sell my soul for the price of a job. And I started to feel pain in here. Thank the good Lord, I write lots of inventory, and I'm transparent with my sponsor, and it usually happens when I'm reading what seems to be a very matter-of-fact inventory. Those are the ones that they stop you on. When I say I got an inventory, I got to read, it's nothing. It's the one I just roll by, and he says, hold it. What was that? And I had to wake up to how much God-reliance and how much job-reliance was going on with me. A little more, leaning into a wind that wasn't even blowing, in fact. So it was time to go through to work again and let God begin to manage my life and me get out of the director's chair. I wasn't in the chair, but I had one leg up on it. I was about to get in there. I know what I need to do now. I'm a career guy now, and I'm gonna do this, and we'll get to God. I was getting a soul sickness that's current unmanageability. I was looking at my checking account regularly. That was fear. I was worried about my bills coming in. That was fear. Prior to this, I get paid, pay bills, go about my life. That wasn't happening. That's current unmanageability. Let's go through the work again. And I'm free enough and clear enough to talk about that and be okay with talking about that. Those of us who have been around a while need to pay attention to that kind of stuff, because the drink is 5-10 years away. But what's going on right now? Where are we currently? So 43 pages in a big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, drive me into a hole, paint me into a corner where it feels like there's no way out. 43 pages. The rest of the chapters have a couple of steps in them, you know, they're broken up. But step one has 43 pages because they knew I was coming in here, and they'd say a chapter won't work for this guy. We can throw doctor's opinion into that mix too, because Silky talks about the obsession of the mind. Silky talks about the allergy to alcohol, this phenomenon, the craving. He talks about the psychic change needed to combat this. So we can put doctor's opinion plus 43 pages where we get cemented into a corner. Oh my God, I'm hopeless, and our books is the more hopeless we feel, the better. I needed to feel that. I needed to have that gift of desperation, not only then, but now when I'm going through the work. Now what? You just told me I'm going to drink no matter what I do. Whether the sun comes up or the sun comes down, I have a pocket full of money or I'm broke, I'm going to drink. New relationship, bad relationship, good relationship, everything up, high, left, right, doesn't make a difference. I'm drinking. And I have no power to stop it. And they offer us a pointer to the solution in step two. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. It's an arrival place. I'm going to get to this place of sanity, wholeness of mind, truth, God, all those words have been interchangeable for me. If I'm in a place of God, I'm not buying the lie anymore. If I'm in a place of truth, I'm not buying the lie anymore. If I'm in a place of sanity, I'm not buying the lie anymore. So if the lie of I'm not buying it, that means I'm not picking up a drink, which means I have no craving going on. The allergy doesn't take place because I never put a drink in me. How about other areas of my life? I'm going to get to this place. And chapter to the agnostics, after they paint us into a corner, point to the solution. They throw us a bone and say, here's the way out. That the main problem centers in the mind, okay, how are we going to get there? And it says that's what this book is about. Its main object, it was to enable me to find a power greater than myself, which will solve my problem. So I'm not going to solve my problem anymore. The steps are going to take me to this power called God, which is going to do it for me. It says in the big book, in chapter 2, agnostics, when we talk about God to a new man, difficulty arises. It's going to be like that. We're going to be religious people now. We're going to go have to shave our heads, live on a hill somewhere. We're going to turn into monks. I need to become a priest, a life of celibacy. And here come ideas, attitudes, and emotions now about God. Because when we hear spiritual path, we mix it up with a religious path. For me, they've met after a whole bunch of years. But that's not what they're talking at the beginning. Difficulty arises. The difficulty is not God towards me. It's me towards God based on my belief system, my perceptions and conceptions about God, about what this is going to look like. So they made it simple for me. They kind of paralleled a line from Ebbie telling Bill, choose your own conception of God. It doesn't have to be the God you grew up with. For me, it was you, a G-O-D, good orderly direction, from a group of drunks. I'd walk into a meeting. I sit with the old timers, hope some of that would rub off. They give me some kudos, a pat on the back. They give me some instructions. I felt great to the next meeting. And at some point, that had to become a personal God to me. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, wholeness of mind, to peace, to dignity, to humility, because I lacked all of that on the way in here. And if I go untreated, that stuff will come back again. So in chapter 2, agnostics, they talk about, they introduce me to step 2. And my sponsors gave me great assignments. They said, okay, you got this G.O.D., this group of drunks for good orderly direction. But they had me write about my old conception of God. The one growing up, that punishing God. That if you even curse, use foul language, you're going right to the cooker. You're in trouble. No one gets to heaven. All of these things. This punishing and damning God. And they said, write about your current conception of God. What does it feel like right now? And it was you. A loving bunch of folks who love me for all the cracks in my armor. And then they gave me a priceless assignment. They said, write about how you would like to have a relationship with God in the future. And I wrote about this loving, caring, forgiving God. And I had something to look to. A goal, if you will. Then my sponsor had me write down where I believe God's working in my life and where I think he wasn't working in my life. What was I willing to turn over to God and what I wasn't willing to turn over to God and what was I afraid of? And I got to see all my current agnosticism, the things that were blocking me from God. What obstacles were blocking me from God? The price for salvation, any price. And what I was looking to do is, God, take away the drink problem. But the other stuff, leave alone. I want to go deep, but not that deep. I want to be transformed, but not that much. I just want to be made comfortable. Just take off a couple of the dead branches, but don't rip the tree out root and branch. It's too painful. It's too uncomfortable. And in order for me to get to a place of sanity, wholeness of mind, and experience God, it meant the whole thing had to come out of the ground. The entire package. And the dead roots had to be cut away. The process of recovery is always removal, never addition. It's subtraction, never addition. God gave me everything I need with all the cracks and all my flaws the day I was born. And I've accumulated belief systems. I've accumulated ideas, perceptions, and conceptions that do not work. All of it had to go. Old man, new man. It all had to go. Was I willing to do this walk? Was I willing to be taken to a place of sanity? Because obviously, based on my experience, I've been insane when it came to picking up a drink or not picking up a drink. I bought the lie every time. How do I prevent myself from buying that lie? Through God's power. We talk about the grace of God, but for the grace of God. You got the grace of God, but for the grace of God. We talk about the grace of God a lot in AA, as we ought to. There's a difference between having the grace of God, getting the grace of God, an unwarranted gift, an undeserved gift, like we would feed our children without thinking about it, because they're ours. There's a difference between getting the grace of God and experience that power which gives us grace. When we experience that power which is giving grace, I have oneness with God. In the fifth step, it talks about walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. There's no disconnection anymore. We're one with God. That is the goal. Am I willing to do that walk? Because if I am, it means a huge, spectacular upheaval is about to happen. Am I willing to go that walk? Because based on my experience, I keep buying the lie in other areas of my life too. I did it with the binging and purging too. Did steps on food. We can do it on anything. But for me at the get-go, it was about this me buying the lie. Being sober for 9 weeks in treatment, and I buy the lie expecting different results. It's going to be different this time. And sometimes we don't even go there. I just need to drink. I'll figure it out once I start drinking. That needs to be removed, and it's only going to happen through this upheaval. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. In chapter 2, Agnostics, it's going to tell us where to find God. The great reality is deep down within. God's within. The crackhead in the crack house right now, the dope fiend in the shooting gallery, the drunk on the river bridge, the Park Avenue drunk, the park bench drunk, all of them who are using right now have just as much God in them as we do this morning. If you will, the Pope in Rome, because God doesn't say, well, I'm going to give you more than him. He will put us on a mission. We will get a calling from God. We will get certain gifts. But the God, he's an equal opportunity guy. The difference is they're blocked and perhaps we're not. The great reality is deep down within, so the journey to get to this God is not going out there of trying to fix the external world. It's about going in, which is what an order I can't go through with it, because I'm going to take a look. I've been walking around with a case of mistaken identity for years. Everything's about to get challenged. Everything. I mean, what if God said, I know you're from South Florida, you're born and raised in South Florida, but I need you to move to Colorado tomorrow. I'll give you the job. I'll give you your family to go. But that's where you need to go. Am I going to do that walk? Or am I going to start pumping the brakes? My sponsor was sharing a story about God's going to be everything or nothing. It says in chapter 10, Gnostics, God is everything or else he is nothing. There's no negotiation here. There's no gray area. God's got to be everything. And there's a story of the saint and his mentor says, you ready to do this walk with me? He's absolutely, come on, let's go. He's, well, I got to go home and tell my folks what I'm about to do. I'm not going to return home. He says, forget it, stay here, I'm leaving. You're not ready. Are you willing to drop everything and just go? The carpenter did that. Are you going to follow me? You're going to wait? Then I'm moving on. Drop everything. Drop the life we know and embrace a life we don't even know yet for salvation. Because if I don't, the time and place is going to come. If I believe I'm the real alcoholic, the guy on page 21, that the drink will get me and I can't even see it. I can be retired with a boat full of money, all the bells and whistles, and I'll be like the guy in the book after 25 years, picks up a drink and dead in four. That's alcoholism. And only God's going to keep me from doing a walk like that. How do I find God? Agnostics tells me, lay aside old ideas. Back to page 27, ideas, attitudes, and emotions. Lay aside old ideas. They don't even say your ideas are bad. They don't get into that controversy. They just say, lay it aside. Prejudices, old ideas about God. They don't even talk about your religion. They just lay it aside. We work with the prayer in our lineage. God, please let me set aside everything I think I know about the big book, the 12 steps, AA and you, God, for an open mind and a new experience. God, please let me see my truth. Just put it aside and make room for a new experience. In fact, when I went through the work with my sponsor recently, I had to do that prayer because as he explained to me, we're about to set off on a new course of action again. And all your experiences and all your knowledge now gets in the way. We got to make room for something new. A full bookshelf, we got some new books, we got to push some aside to make room for new. So I need to lay aside old ideas about everything. Am I willing to do that? And why? Because I see other people solving their problems upon a simple reliance upon a universe. I got to stop doubting the power of God. When God's working in your life, I see you joyous, happy, and free. The eyes don't lie. What does he have? I want to do what he's doing. I come to an AA meeting. I see the elders laughing at a table, smoking a cigarette, having a cup of coffee. Their life seems to be good. They're all about God. I have to stop doubting this power of God because I got none. And I'm just coming back from a drunk. How, where, and why to find God? You just missed a great talk for a whole hour, I just got to tell you. I have been phenomenal for 1 hour. I'm also very humble, too. How, where, and why to find God? Now, I didn't do anything yet. I just got willing. So I come in with 10, 15, 20 years. I got some stuff going on. I just come back from a drunk. And Pat, I see Pat gives a talk. And something, not in here, something in here says, go talk to that man. And I sit with Pat. He's, okay, are you ready? You're willing to go to any lengths? Yeah. Now he starts to give me some directions. Starts to explain step one, the pointer in step two. If I pump the brakes, I got another drunk in me. Period, not negotiable. For the little dope fiends out there, I didn't do any due diligence on Flacco, my drug deal. I just said, give me two. I didn't get a weather report somewhere in Peru to make sure that the powder was grown in a good climate. I went to the liquor store, the bartender. I didn't ask the bartender, has this been watered down? Have you spiked this? Is this really good liquor? Let me see some. Just give me a drink, and I drink it. No pumping brakes. No pumping brakes. Get it in as quick as possible and keep it coming. Now I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm literally, well, not literally, figuratively bleeding to death. And I sit down with a guy like Pat, and he says, we'll stop the bleeding, and to prevent any further bleeding, you need to do A, B, and C. I go, now, hold on a second. It's a little drastic. You know who it's drastic to? Alcoholism and my alcoholic mind. Because when we start to taste the honey of God, the spirit wakes up, and it feels right. But not right like when we have a whole bunch of money. That's a different kind of feeling. This is something deep inside that many of us never experienced before. There's a stillness. There's not even an excitement about it. There's just an okayness that we're walking with this power called God and the armor of God upon us. And the very things I used to do looked attractive are no longer attractive to me. I've been restored to sanity, but I need to take some other action, and that's a decision in three and some steps in 4 through 9, which these guys are going to talk about, so I can get to the sunlight of the Spirit where the drink is finally off my back. Am I willing to do that walk and unhook the shackles that I've been in for the longest time? God will finally give me the key back and unhook them and find out really what's in there. And then maybe at that point, I begin to see the flickering lights. I can begin to see this kingdom of God. And there's no turning back then. And I'm out of time. That's all I got. Thanks.